Savvy Business Radio, home to over 500,000 listeners per month, and runs in syndication on 8 AM/FM stations nationwide, including iHeartRadio and 6 podcasting platforms. To find out about our paid sponsorship opportunities or to become a guest and find out how we can help you get your message out in a bigger way, call 732-474-7375 or email Christina at SavvyBusinessRadio.com.
Our first guest today is Deborah Maragopoulos, best-selling author of Hormones in Harmony. She is also a family nurse practitioner and well-known Harmony Queen. Her book inspires readers to uncover the root of their health problems and connect with their inner, innate ability to heal. Our second guest is Joel Helfer, known as the 10-minute radio producer because he can prep and get any guest ready for a great interview in just 10 minutes. Find out more about Joel at joelhelfer.com.
Hi, Deborah. Welcome to Savvy Business Radio. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm so pleased to have you today. We're going to be talking about something that's come on the radar for me, which I hadn't paid attention to in my 20s and 30s. And started to pay a little more attention to in my 40s, and that's stress. In my 40s, I was diagnosed with Graves' disease, and one of the contributing factors my doctor kept saying was stress. I'm like, well, how do I have stress? I don't feel like I'm stressed. But I think a good portion of Americans are stressed without even realizing that they're on a hyper sense of stress on an ongoing basis and how it affects their body. And even more so as we start to get older and get towards that range of middle of the life or menopause and that. And so you've helped a lot of people with those issues and that change of time, men and women. Share a little bit about your background and how you help your audience.
Thank you very much. So I'm a family nurse practitioner. I practice intuitive integrative healthcare. And so what that means is I sort of blend the science of medicine with the art of healing. And I use a lot of natural therapies. As a nurse background versus a physician background, my focus is on wellness and education. So I do a lot of lifestyle education with my patients. And the reason I got into all this is I gave birth when I was 23 to a baby that was intersex. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they didn't know a lot about what the possibilities were. We sort of only had, you know, a couple choices, and I felt I was really following my mother's intuition to say, you know, I shouldn't go down the medical path. I really need to focus on what feels right to me. So I went back, got a lot more training in what's called neuroimmune endocrinology, which is the study of all the hormones in the body, to try to figure out how to help my child. I get my graduate degree. I become a family nurse practitioner. I become really good at what I'm doing, and all of a sudden the universe sends me tons and tons of hormonally challenged people, and I have to figure out how to help them. So I've been doing this work for almost 30 years.
Wow. And, you know, it's amazing when an awful situation comes into our life and you turned it around to figure out, like, how can I help my child? And now you've helped so many more in the world. Wow, that is amazing. I really didn't know what endocrinology did. I know I went to see my endocrinologist for my thyroid, but didn't realize that it had to do with the whole study of hormones and such. Because I'm thinking in your 20s and 30s and 40s, your hormones act different in male and female's bodies. What does the audience need to pay attention to as you get older as far as your hormones go?
Well, so it's endocrinology is what it's called. And endocrinology basically means the study of hormones. And let me explain a little bit more than that. So your hormones basically are produced by glands in your body. You have 7 of them. Okay, you don't just have your ovaries and testicles. You have 7 glands in your body that produce hormones. And these hormones, endocrinology is the study of this biochemistry that actually doesn't just act locally where the gland is produced. It acts distantly. These hormones travel through the blood and go someplace else and do their thing. So, for instance, you have other glands in your body, like your salivary glands, that produce saliva, but that just acts locally in your mouth, right? Mm-hmm. But your hormones, your ovaries produce estrogen, and that acts all over your body. It acts in your brain to help your memory and your concentration and your happiness level. It acts in your breasts to get them developed so that you can breastfeed a baby if you're pregnant. It helps your colon and your skin and your hair to be healthy. So it works everywhere in the body, not just where it's produced. So that's what endocrinology is. That's what these type of hormones do. Mm-hmm. So you have 7 different glands in your body. Have you ever have you ever taken a yoga class? Do you know the term chakra?
Yeah.
Okay, so the chakras, the 7 chakras, correlate with the endocrine glands. So in the root chakra, at the very bottom of the pyramid, so where you're sitting, it would correlate with the ovaries or testes in a male. And then the 2nd chakra correlates with your pancreas that produces your insulin. And your 3rd chakra correlates with your adrenal glands that produces your stress hormones. We're going to talk a lot about that one. And the 4th chakra correlates with your heart, which is actually your thymus, which controls your immune system and protects you. Mm. Your 5th chakra is in your throat. You mentioned Graves' disease. That's your thyroid. Your 6th chakra, which would be like your between your eyes, right? Your third eye is your pituitary gland, which medicine has always believed is the manager, the main boss of the system, but it is not. It is just a middle manager, and I'm going to explain that.
Wow.
And the 7th chakra is the pineal gland, which produces your sleep hormone, melatonin.
Wow.
So those 7 chakras, those 7 endocrine glands, that's where east meets west. That's where energy and matter interface.
Wow. So the hormones are so much deeper part of your entire system functioning than I ever realized. Share more about how they, you know, function, because I thought it was interesting when you mentioned that the, was it the 3rd chakra was the thyroid?
The 3rd chakra is the adrenals. The 5th chakra is the thyroid.
Ah, wow.
So imagine, and the way they're colored is that sort of that rainbow color. So you go from the red, to the orange, to the yellow, to the green, to the blue, to the indigo, to the violet. I mean, it's just, it's this amazing, when I was studying sort of Eastern medicine, and I was seeing this correlation, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the hormones. The hormones are the interface between matter and energy. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited because I was dealing with so many people that were, I called it hormonally challenged, not just because they were suffering with their hormones out of balance, but they were challenging us as healthcare providers to help them.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to deal with people that are having hormonal issues. And the reason for that is just because these hormones are floating around in your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. And we can measure those hormones. We can measure thyroid hormone and adrenal hormones and pancreatic hormones and pituitary hormones and ovarian and testicular hormones. We can measure all of these hormones. Mm-hmm. That's only like measuring people on the freeway, not measuring people who live in their homes. It's like a census. What's actually happening is in the house, in the cells, not necessarily on the freeway. So it's not an accurate measurement of what's going on. So I have patients all the time come to me like, I feel awful, and give me all these symptoms. I've gained all this weight around my belly. I'm losing my hair. I have no sex drive. I can't sleep at night. I'm really irritable, moody, you know, whatever. Memory loss. I mean, all kinds of symptoms, but nothing shows in my blood. My doctor keeps saying nothing's wrong with me, but I know something's wrong. That's because he's measuring or she's measuring the hormones in the blood, and the parameter of normal is rather wide, and your body is not going to show abnormalities until you're way over the edge of disease. So why wait to treat you until you're that sick? Why not try to push you into optimal wellness?
And is it that the tests aren't sensitive enough to pick up those things going on in the body? Because it's interesting what you're mentioning there. Those symptoms are a good portion of my friends in the 40 to 50 range. And is it just that the hormones have become unbalanced? What's happening in people's bodies to cause this?
Well, their hormones are becoming unbalanced, and the reason that the blood test doesn't pick it up as sensitive as people, especially women, are super sensitive to these changes, is because your body is set for what's called homeostasis, meaning that the feedback mechanism between the master controller, which I will introduce to you in just a few minutes, and the rest of the endocrine system, the rest of the body, is so sensitive that it's always keeping this beautiful balance all the time. But that does not mean that what's actually happening at the cellular tissue level is actually reflective of what's going on in the bloodstream. So, for instance, you can be hypothyroid, have all the symptoms of it. You're cold, you're gaining weight, you're constipated, you have no energy, but it doesn't show up in your bloodstream until you've completely not produced enough thyroid hormone at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's going to take a while because your body's trying to keep that in balance. Think of your hormones like a symphony. It's creating this beautiful music, and what it's singing to is your DNA, your genetic encodement. Mm-hmm. It's telling your DNA what to do, and your DNA is dancing accordingly. So you have, and I want you to think of your DNA not like it's set in stone. Okay. I want you to think of your DNA as if you're playing cards. It's like a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. And you've got dealt out, let's say you've got dealt out a dozen cards, but you still have a handful of cards here, like a little short deck, that you can actually borrow from. Now, what we can measure scientifically is the cards that are actually in your hand. But what we can't measure yet, we will be able to someday, is the cards that you can borrow from in this deck that you don't get to see yet. Okay? So how you play your cards is how you win, whether you win the game or not. So you could have bad cards, per se, poor genetics, and play them well and win the game of life. Or you could have good cards, great genetics, and play them poorly, make poor lifestyle choices, and lose the game of life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, wow.
So your hormones are singing to your DNA. Your DNA is dancing accordingly. Mm-hmm. Who's the maestro of this symphony? And I'm not just talking about your hormones. I'm talking about your neurotransmitters. So those chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, those chemicals that run your brain, your emotions, your moods, etc., those chemicals, those neurotransmitters are like mini, little tiny hormones. And your immune system is also run by tiny little hormones called cytokines. It's all hormones. We'll call them hormones by basis of, just to help you see the picture. They have different names, but they all act the same way.
Okay.
They enter a cell via a receptor site, like a little lock and key mechanism. They tell the cell what to do. That's how they all act the same way. Some of them get deeper into the cell, some of them only stay on the surface, but either way, they are the messengers.
What I'm thinking, Deborah, is when you mentioned before that the hormone system is really the connection between matter and energy, I'm intrigued by that. What does that mean exactly? How does the hormones do that?
Let's take energy in the form of sunlight.
Okay.
Okay? So you've got sunlight, and it is being absorbed through photosynthesis into an apple. And the apple creates energy in the form of fructose, which is fruit sugar. Mm-hmm. Okay, you eat the apple, and your pancreas produces insulin so you can get that sugar into your cells, energy into matter. The hormones are what communicate. Let's take another example. Let's take the sun again, and this time the sun is going down. When it starts to go down, your pineal gland picks up the message from your skin to say, the sun is going down, you better start making melatonin.
Wow.
And put you to sleep. So your body gets messages via the energy out there through cells in your body. The hormones then transform that message to the rest of the body and said, okay, it's nighttime now. We need to do the work of night, which is healing, repairing, getting the immune system function, versus the work of day, which is different.
Wow. So what I'm getting here, Deborah, is I've noticed in the summer when the sun stays up longer, my energy level is much higher. I get out of working with my clients in Midtown Manhattan, and I'm like, whoa, let's go to the park, let's walk, whatever. Then when fall and winter hit and the sun starts going down, say at 5-ish, I stop working with my clients, and I'm like less inclined to want to go out and exercise and hang out and do stuff because I'm feeling like I just want to go home and be sluggish. And is that due to the light? Is that really triggering my body to say, okay, you need to slow down because the light has stopped or gone down?
Yes, that's actually a natural reaction. If you look at any animal, unless it's a nocturnal hunter, they basically, all animals are going to slow down their activity at night, and our brains act the same way. Let's go back to the maestro, the whole symphony of hormones. Okay, so what you have in your brain, it's about at the level of the third eye, is something called the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus actually orchestrates your entire neuroimmune endocrine system, all the hormones all the time, are orchestrated by the hypothalamus. Okay, the whole symphony is orchestrated by the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus controls your immune system, your reproductive system, your energy levels, it controls your body temperature, it controls your weight set point, it controls your heart rate, your respiratory rate, the color of your skin, your day-night cycles. 4 out of 5 of your senses go through the hypothalamus, so the hypothalamus always knows where you are in space and time, and its job is to keep you alive. This is the true boss of your body.
Wow. So it sounds, wow, I always thought that the, as far as the temperature gauge and your weight and all that, I thought it all was tied to the thyroid and the thyroid hormone, but it's the hypothalamus where it all starts.
The hypothalamus orchestrates it all because the thyroid only does one thing. The thyroid controls your metabolism, but it is told to control your metabolism via the hypothalamus. So because you've had Graves' disease, you probably understand some of this terminology about the thyroid hormones. So you have your T4 and your T3, right?
Yes.
Okay, so T4 is the main thyroid hormone. The active form of it is T3. Okay, and the reason we call it 4 and 3 is because of how many iodine molecules. If it has 4 iodine molecules on it, it's a T4. If it has 3 iodine molecules on it, it's a T3. It has to only have 3 in order to get into the cell. So T3 is the active thyroid hormone that actually tells your cells to make more energy. Now, on the other side, so I want you to imagine T4 and T3 are like two little children, and they're sitting on a seesaw. On the other side of the seesaw is TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. Mm-hmm. So that's this balance that you get. So when you're hypothyroid and your T4 and T3 are low, TSH is high, and vice versa. When you're hyperthyroid, Graves' disease, T4 and T3 are high, TSH is low. It's a seesaw, mm-hmm. right? So it's always looking for this equilibrium. But what controls the TSH, the thyroid, is actually the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus actually produces a lot of hormones. But the big hormone that turned me on to the hypothalamus was a hormone called pro-opiomelanocortin, and you're never going to remember that. Call it POMC. And the reason I discovered this is exactly what we were talking about before we started the interview, is I was seeing a whole bunch of patients in my practice who were middle-aged, and by middle-age, it could have started as early as mid-30s, into their 60s. Mostly they were women, but I also had men in my practice had these same issues. Their thyroids were low. Their adrenal glands were low, so their stress hormones were off. They were overweight, and they were unhappy, and they tended to have issues with insulin resistance, meaning their glucose metabolism was off. And they all had these same symptoms. And I would treat their thyroid. I would support their adrenals. I would actually put them on an insulin-resistant diet. I would get them exercising. You know, I would basically, oftentimes it came on antidepressants, so I was giving them natural stuff to help with their depression. And I'm thinking, my gosh, I'm giving them so much stuff to try to get them well, even though it's all natural. Mm-hmm. What? There's got to be a core issue here. And I couldn't find anything in medicine. This was in 1999. And that's when I went to animal studies. And I'm like, okay, are there something in animal studies that show the same kind of symptoms in like rats or mice or something? And sure enough, I found it. I found these fat white mice study, and they had discovered that when these mice got to that point and everything was off, their little mouse thyroid was off and their adrenals were off and they were overweight and they were sluggish and they didn't act very happy and they had basically pre-diabetes, they found a hormone in these mice. Now, in order to find the hormone, they had to kill the mice. The mouse. They couldn't keep the mouse alive. It was called pro-opiomelanocortin, and that was the hormone that was off. That hormone is produced by the hypothalamus, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's it. It's the hypothalamus we need to be treating. Mm-hmm. That hormone becomes the that hormone breaks down to become TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, and adrenal stimulating hormone, which is called ACTH, and glucose stimulating hormone, which is called a glucose factor, and it becomes all your happy endorphins in your brain. It also controls the color of your skin. One hormone controls 5 different systems.
Wow.
That's why the hypothalamus is so important, and we ignore it in medicine.
I've never even heard of it. No, actually, I've heard of the hypothalamus, but I had no idea what the heck it did in my body at all. But this is intriguing to me. So a lot of those symptoms, sadly, you mentioned I have all of them. And portion of my friend, I mentioned before the interview that a lot of the listeners are between their 40s and 50s, and they're dealing with the deal of having overweight issues, being overly stressed, more so than when I was in my 30s or 20s. It just seemed like I could handle more. How do you get your hypothalamus back in working order where it's balanced again so that all of your systems are operating?
That's a really good question. So first of all, I did write a book on this called Hormones in Harmony, Heal Your Hypothalamus for Optimal Health, Graceful Aging, and Joyous Energy. And the reason I focus on the hypothalamus is because if you focus there, everything else comes into balance. So So how do you get it in balance? Well, when I was seeing these patients with all of these symptoms and feeding them all of these supplements to try to get them in balance, I was concerned that as a nurse, I'm a nurse practitioner, but as a nurse, we always try to take and do what we ask our patients to do. And I'm thinking, I couldn't do this if I was my own patient. It's too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting them on special diets, and I'm having them exercise, and I'm having them sleep in the dark, which is great, but it's just too much stuff, too much to do and too much to take. So I was researching the hypothalamus, found proopio melanocortin, and still couldn't figure out what was the one thing I could feed my patients and fix the hypothalamus, and I couldn't find an answer. And that same child that I gave birth to that was born intersex was 14 at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, basically, this child's brain was exposed to both male and female hormones, so he and we raised him male at the time. He's actually a they now, and that's how we raise intersex children now, but back in 1984, that was another choice. But anyhow, and when he was 14 years old, he's like rubbing my shoulders because I'm really frustrated at the computer and saying, Mom, why don't you just meditate about this and see if you dream an answer?
Mm.
And I did. I dreamt of a formula that actually would feed the hypothalamus. And so then it took about 3 years for me to create it. I started doing research on it. And once I created this formula and started feeding it to my patients, all of a sudden I didn't have to give them all that other stuff.
Wow.
They came into balance. In my dream, I was standing before the tree of life holding this golden chalice, and they were drinking this liquid. I knew they were intuitively better. I'd wake up and write, okay, what was in the chalice, and write everything down. I call my formula Genesis Gold, and it's been out since 2003. And it's amazing because it's working. It's actually helping to heal people's hypothalamus, and I don't have to give them so much thyroid support, adrenal support, glucose support.
Wow.
And in fact, you talked about your energy being lower in the wintertime.
Yes.
Okay. So let me give you an example of that. There's something called seasonal affective disorder.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. So seasonal affective disorder is when you basically, when you get to the point where you're experiencing more dark than light, because now it's the fall and we fall back the time, and now we're, at least we do this in California, and now all of a sudden it's dark at 5 o'clock in the evening. There's a lot of people that'll get depressed and they'll gain weight. They have very little energy. They're really sluggish. Their thyroid levels are low. Their adrenal levels are low. And most of the time we just treat them with antidepressants. I actually had that disorder. Before I created Genesis Gold, I had this disorder for years, to the point where my husband was like, oh my gosh, it's getting time for fall back. You're going to be really, really moody. So like my rest of my research subjects, I'm taking the stuff right along with everyone else. We're all taking the Genesis Gold. I'm probably 6 months into taking it before the fall back time happens. And all of a sudden, maybe 4 weeks before we change the clocks, I am craving orange vegetables like they're coming, like chocolate, like a premenstrual chocolate craving.
Wow.
I can't get enough yams, pumpkins, butternut squash. I'm eating in breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And guess what? I don't have seasonal affective disorder for the first time in 20 years.
Mm.
I haven't had it since. What happens is when you balance your hypothalamus, your body starts talking to you, and it tells you what you need.
Wow. And
because remember, the hypothalamus is the maestro. So it's got to get you to communicate. It's got to talk to you somehow. And it's going to talk to you through desires and cravings.
Wow. And so those cravings you're getting, they're not out of the... Recently, I've had a huge craving for mushrooms. And
mm-hmm.
I heard this doctor online talking about if you have a certain... I think it was selenium. If you're missing... Maybe I'm saying it wrong. This mineral in your body, your nails will start to be a little white or something or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that looks like my nails. And oddly enough, he said the one thing that really helps with that was mushrooms. I'm like, that's what I'm craving!
Yes, your body talks to you. And selenium is one of those minerals that actually enhances thyroid function.
Oh, wow. So I've been craving mushrooms a lot lately and having that. So that is super intriguing. A couple years ago, I was wanting a lot more broccoli, and I was eating broccoli like crazy. But all of a sudden, my craving for chocolate, which I want usually on a daily basis, went almost to zilch. My friend's like, yeah, it's magnesium. There's magnesium in the broccoli, and you're not craving it now from the chocolate because you're getting it in the broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
So this is intriguing. So say someone that you're talking to out there is feeling sluggish. They're not really into the I would say maybe healthy eating. They're kind of grabbing stuff on the go, maybe a fast meal to go. How do you get them to realize what foods they're craving when they don't even know because they've not introduced a lot of it into their body often?
That's a hard thing, because if they're eating the standard American diet, also known as SAD.
So sad.
Standard American diet, SAD. It is difficult to break through that diet and get them to their cravings will usually be for junk, okay, mm-hmm. because it's all they're being exposed to. It's hard for them. They're not going to all of a sudden crave broccoli, per se. It's mm-hmm. difficult for them. You almost have to introduce that piece to them. So that is a difficult piece for me, to be honest with you, because my patients come from all around the world, and they usually have a fairly healthy basis, and they're pretty hormonally challenged. They're train wrecks when they see me. They've already tried everything else, including a healthy diet. I don't usually deal with people on the standard American diet, but what I tell people who are eating that, in order to get back in touch with their body, is start introducing one colored vegetable every week. Mm. One colored piece of fruit every week. Something different every week to try to introduce back to your body some of those other nutrients, because the standard American diet is basically beige.
Mm-hmm.
There's no color in it. And without the color, you don't get the micronutrients you need. You get the calories, which is why so many people on the standard American diet are bigger than they need to be.
Yeah.
Because they're getting lots of calories, but they're basically malnourished. And you can't get the nourishment by taking a multivitamin. You got to eat it from the foods.
Mm. Yeah, and you had mentioned before the importance of stress in creating a lot of the imbalance. How does stress play a factor, and is it really that the hypothalamus is unbalanced, and is that causing the stress? Is it the chicken before the egg, or the egg before the chicken?
Well, okay, so let's talk about what stress really is.
Okay.
So your stress response is a way for you to get away from danger.
Mm-hmm.
So the stress response was set up so that if you were Neanderthal man or woman and a tiger jumped out from behind a rock at you, you better be able to get your heart rate and your blood pressure up and run the heck away, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your stress response is designed to save you. But when you're stressing out because you're late for a meeting, your hypothalamus doesn't know the difference between a tiger and the meeting. It's only feeling your response, which is, I'm in danger. So it starts the process. And the first process is even before the hypothalamus. It's the adrenaline reaction you get, which raises your heart and your blood pressure. And then the hypothalamus says, oh my gosh, we've got to fuel this fight or flight. And it has your adrenals produce cortisol so you can release stored sugar. And that will fuel the fight or flight so you can get away from the tiger. Now, you're sitting in traffic late for a meeting. You don't need any more stored sugar. So where is that stuff going? What happens to it, ends up getting stored in the only cells in your body that can store sugar, your fat cells. The rest of your body become resistant to that stored sugar. For instance, your heart. If you make a fist, audience, make a fist.
Okay.
That's the size of your heart. If it's any bigger than that, it will be an inefficient pump for your body.
Really?
So the only thing your heart can do with extra sugar is pump faster or grow. Now, it knows it can't grow, and it doesn't need to pump any faster because you're really not in danger. So it becomes resistant, insulin resistant. That's where insulin resistance comes in. It becomes resistant to the insulin and sugar, doesn't allow it in, so that extra insulin and sugar goes and gets stored in your fat cells. Now, the fat cells it tends to be stored in is right around your belly. I call it your buoy or your insulin meter. That fat is what's going to help you survive. If you truly were in danger for a long, long period of time, you eventually are going to be chased up a tree or into a cave. You're not going to get out for a while. You better be able to feed off of that fat around your belly because you're not getting any food for a while. So it's all a survival mechanism gone awry because we're not living in the tiger world anymore.
Wow. So it's our body's defense mechanism, just trying to keep us alive, but without realizing, because of the way we're reacting to a situation, we're causing it to react in a way that's not necessary at the moment. How do we get it to change that function?
That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what you need to do is you need to retrain your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So the messages between the hypothalamus and the pituitary and the adrenal gland needs to shift. And you do that a couple different ways. The first thing I tell my patients to actually start to calm down is to sleep in the dark.
Mm.
Why is that so important? Because when you sleep in the dark, you produce enough melatonin to reverse the insulin resistance, lower your cortisol levels, and start calming down your entire system. Your body needs rest, and it does not rest in the daylight. Okay, wow. So that's number one. You must sleep in the dark. They have done studies on college students who will do anything for money, and they basically keep them up, and then they let them go to sleep in a super dark room. They take and they measure their melatonin via saliva, and it's really high because it's dark. They shine a pen light on the back of their knees, and that melatonin level drops, and they wake up. That's how your skin can pick up the light message. So when I have these patients say, well, I put an eye mask on, I'm like, it's not working because you got the television running. You've got digital lights in your room. You've got a street light shining into your window. All of that is telling your body to stay alert because it's really not dark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So turn off all your lights and sleep in the dark, number one.
Mm-hmm.
The number two thing to reduce the stress is learn how to meditate. Now, not everybody can do this very well. To be honest, I'm not very good at it. So what I've learned how to do is to learn how to breathe. And if you'd like, I could teach you and your audience a very, very short breathing technique that will actually help you calm down pretty quickly.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so I want you to take your hands and put them up in the namaste or prayer position right in front of your heart. Okay? And then I want you to turn them upside down and just let them fall into your lap. And notice how relaxed your shoulders are. Okay, see, the point of your fingers are in your lap. You feel that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just relax your shoulders. And now I want you to close your eyes and take a deep breath. And when you exhale, imagine that you're just blowing out everything you're worried about, everything you have concerns about, all your fears, just blow them out. Very good. And now I want you to take a second deep breath, and I want you to breathe all the way down to where your ribs meet your belly. So breathe as deep as you can, deeper, 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 deeper. Hold it for a second, and then slowly release it. And as you're releasing it, imagine that fear and that worry and that frustration, that anger is being blown out like dark smoke right out of your mouth. Blow it, blow it, blow it out. Very good. Now, in the third deep breath, you're going to breathe all the way down to where your fingertips are in your lap. Now, of course, the breath doesn't go that deep, but you're going to imagine it, and you're going to take a deep breath. Now, breathe in as deep as you can, all the way past your chest, past your belly, all the way down to where your fingertips meet in your lap. Hold it, and when you exhale, blow it all out, all that fear, all that worry, all that anxiety, just let it go like smoke out of your mouth.
Wow, yeah, I already do feel a lot calmer.
So what that does, from a biological level, if you just introduced a whole lot more oxygen, most people, when they're anxious, they breathe from their nipples up and not from their belly. Because if you look at a baby, when they breathe from their belly. Their little bellies go in and out. That's how we're supposed to breathe. But when we get anxious, we hyperventilate, and we breathe really high, almost like we're using our shoulder, our clavicles, our collarbones to breathe. And that actually allows more dead air without oxygen, full of carbon dioxide, to fill up our lung space, and we don't get enough oxygen. So by focusing those deep breaths, I mean, I'll do this exercise, like, right before I'm about to deal with a stressful situation, I'll just put my hands in that position, hold them, even if I'm standing, hold them, close my eyes for a second, and take those three deep breaths, getting deeper and deeper and deeper until my body feels really calm, and then walk into the stressful situation. Now, let's say you're driving and you feel this. Don't close your eyes, but you can still take those same deep breaths.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you'll notice when you start to breathe, you really aren't breathing that deep.
Yeah.
And if you practice breathing deeper, you get more oxygen, you calm your hypothalamus down because you're no longer in that. Hyperventilating is almost like running. You're running away from something. Your hypothalamus is like, oh my gosh, are we in danger? Did a tiger jump out from behind the tree? Because her job is to save you, is to help you survive.
Yeah.
That's her only job.
Wow.
And she has a huge job because she's orchestrating everything. So rather than tuning every instrument in your symphony, why don't we focus on the hypothalamus?
The conductor.
The conductor, exactly.
And wow, it intrigued me when you said that babies are breathing the correct way from their diaphragm, I've heard. Why does it change as we become older? Why don't we just naturally remember what we did as children? Why does it change as we get older often?
Well, I think that we start to incorporate between 2 and 6 years old, we're in sort of like a theta brainwave state, sort of a meditative state. So we're just sort of being imprinted with whatever's going around us. So if you have a family that's really stressed and, you know, stressed about money, stressed about, you know, marital situation, stressed about anything, you're incorporating those imprintable messages in your brain. So you're learning a stress response. So by the time you enter school, you're already pre-programmed to deal with stress in a certain way. Mm-hmm. How many parents do you see sit down and meditate? How many people breathe deeply? So we're raising these hyper children. I call them the difference between the Chihuahua way of reacting and the bloodhound way. we're raising these little hyper, like, shaky little Chihuahua kids that are barking and scared of everything because we're doing that. They're responding to that. But you can take a shaky little Chihuahua and put it with Caesar Milan, the dog whisperer, right? Uh-huh. Somebody who's super calm and calm it down and have it act like a bloodhound.
Yeah, and this intrigues me because you've heard more and more people say, well, the kids can't sit still, they have ADHD, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking perhaps they just don't want to sit in a chair for 8 hours because they're children.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
They're not meant to sit in a chair for 8 hours. They're meant to learn through play.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't start school till they're 7 years old when they're after that state. They should be playing and learning in that way. And they're being hyper-stimulated by all of the screens. How many little kids you see with iPhones and iPads in their hands being hyper-stimulated by that screen time?
Wow, I never thought of that. I was it just blew my mind. I was in a restaurant a couple years ago, and it was like a 2-year-old baby they had in a height chair, and he started to get a little fussy, and they just threw him an iPad and keep yourself busy, and we'll us adults will have fun time. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it's become a babysitter. It's how horrible is that? This instrument here that they're just messing around with, and boy, could that little kid get around that iPad real quick? But I found it really sad. I mean, the kids who grew up with it are like, well, this is pretty nifty. I love this thing, but I think it's really also becoming a danger for our society. I'm not really loving them that much.
I absolutely feel that way. I mean, when the computers first came out, and we got a desktop computer like back in the 90s, but at the same time, it was only used for, you know, emails and a little bit of computer research and stuff like that. But we literally, not just the iPads and stuff, we turned off our cable TV way, way, way early because I realized early on, before I even had discovered the hypothalamus, not that rediscovered it, I was trained in pre-med about it, but we don't use it in medicine. But before I rediscovered it and decided to focus on it, I decided that screen time was actually not good for our kids and that they needed to play as much as possible and be outside and learn to entertain themselves and that it was actually going to endanger them. And I started preaching to my patients, this is what's going to cause the most problems with our learning issues in children. We're seeing obesity in children, behavior issues, and it's because of too much screen time. They're sedentary, they're hyper-stimulated, and then you throw the standard American diet on top of that. Mm. It's got all kinds of health issues.
Yeah.
So.
And on top of it, I was talking to an actor who's now in his 70s. He said, when I was acting in my youth, people would be enthralled by the very drama of the acting, of whatever we were acting out for them. Now, I can't go on stage and just do acting. We have to have, what's that called, special effects to the 10th power. It's like craziness. And people want to be entertained where all their senses are being hyper-aware.
Hyper-stimulated.
Hyper-stimulated, yes. Not healthy. Yeah. Well, this has been so intriguing. I want to thank you for coming to share all this valuable wisdom with our audience. Before we go, though, please let them know where they can find out more about you, work with you, and find out more about your wonderful products.
So you can go to thehormonequeen.com. That's my website. And you can find Genesis Gold there, my Hormones in Harmony book. I have a free offer for your guests called Calm Down to Slim Down, which is a free guide. I give you lots of tips on how to sleep in the dark and some great nutritional tips and exercise tips and a meditation as well, which is a little longer than I just gave you. It's a guided meditation, and it's really helpful. So thehormonequeen.com.
Oh, wow. This has been so fabulous. I want to thank you because this has been very educational for me as well as I know it's going to be for all of our listeners who are going through the same thing I'm going through. And I'm really hoping your information as well as them going to your website and checking out all your wonderful material really help them get through this difficult time with their body and get to balance. So again, Deborah, thank you for coming to Savvy Business Radio.
Thank you.
Now here's our interview with Joel Helfer, the 10-Minute Radio Producer.
Hey, Joel, welcome to Savvy Business Radio. How are you this morning?
Hi, Christina. I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
You betcha. I'm so excited to have you on because we're talking about one of my absolute favorite topics today, and that is broadcasting. And I, having done this now on Savvy Business Radio for 4.5 years, I've had quite a few people call me and say, hey, I want to be a guest on a show, or I want to start my own show. What is needed? And I'm not really interested in teaching, but you're out there helping people get clear and training them and helping them and all that. But before we go to all of that and you share that, share how you even got into broadcasting and what led you to, you know, working in this industry.
What happened was it was what you call a fortunate accident. I joined an internet group called Authority Agency, and one of the members of the group had a real live radio program on 560 AM The Answer in Chicago, which is where I lived. Mm-hmm. And he was listening to some of the things I was talking about, reading some of my posts. And he called me up one day and he says, I need some help getting guests for the show. And I understand you know how to talk to people on the phone because I had written an article about it. And I said, I do. He said, how'd you like to help me get guests for my show? And I said, okay, even though I knew nothing about it. And he said, if you do, I'll make you my radio producer. Mm-hmm. So that's how it started.
Wow. And I've read about people who, I have this book that my friend gave me for Christmas last year called The Radio Producer's Guide, Everything You Need to Know to Be a Producer in Radio. And wow, it's detailed. If you're doing it on radio, it's very structured and such. But I kind of just learned it as I went and basically doing a lot of homework on each guest and going to search for who's a good person, who's not a good person. Now being on air for 4.5 years, we actually have a lot of people calling us, and now it's actually my team going through it, you know, sifting who's really a good match for our audience and such. Was it hard for you to get into the role, or was it a learning process? How did it work out for you?
It was a learning process, and what we did is we used LinkedIn as the resource for our guests at the beginning, and we had a real simple messaging system that got people to schedule telephone calls with us. And then from the telephone calls, we had like a short interview and decided who to pick for the show. But it took time.
Yeah. I used to do the pre-recorded, you know, let's have a little chat before we get started, because I found early on, this is interesting, I don't know if you've had any experiences like this yourself, either doing a show or producing it, but I would have people just email me or send a quick message and say, hey, here's my details, and it sounded great on paper, but then when we got together in the interview, there were things that were not working out. One girl was quite abrasive because I couldn't say her name properly and such. So then I was like, okay, from now on, we're going to do a quick, like, 5-minute, have my team check them out, make sure they can actually present well on phone, or send us a video where we can see that they've done other interviews where they can hold their own and actually have a clear message to deliver. How did that work out for you? Did you ever have any issues where someone was, like, very abrasive, either at the interview or prior?
We were fortunate. Mm-hmm. We really never had anyone who was abrasive, but we had other problems, like they didn't show up, they didn't respond to our queries. When we asked them for basic information so we could prepare a interview or prepare an introduction, nothing came. And then in a lot of cases, they'd call up like 10, 15 minutes before and say, okay, I'm ready for the interview. Now what?
Yeah, and Joel, this is really something, and this is great for anyone out there who's thinking, hey, I'd like to be a guest on a future podcast or a radio show, TV show. Really, you need to do your homework on your side of the coin as well, because to show up and not be prepared or not show up at all is, one, disrespectful to the host and to the audience, but and to yourself and your business, because it reflects on your business, but also to really do your homework on the actual show and be ready to answer the questions. What do you find from all of your experience makes like the perfect ideal guest for a show?
There's three parts to it, Christina. The first part is preparation. just like you alluded to. The second part is practice. Like anything else, you have to practice. You have to practice your questions and answers. And the third part is you have to have an outcome. You have to have a goal in mind. What's the reason for even talking on the interview, and what are you trying to get the listeners or the audience to do? Mm-hmm. So those are the three parts to it. And you have to be kind of fun. You have to be entertaining. You have to make people feel like they're eavesdropping on a conversation.
I like that one. I always tell people, think of it like you're sitting in a Starbucks and you're just having coffee with a friend and talking. And that's really what a conversation, aka interview, should be. It shouldn't be like, okay, question, now your answer. Question, and now your answer. You want to make it easy breezy, like you're having a chat with your friend and others are just kind of eavesdropping in and listening in.
In the meantime, if you can offer something that's kind of entertaining, kind of fun, maybe a little valuable, it makes it much more useful to the people. And then once it keeps them to keep from turning out, because people can do that in the middle of an interview. They can go somewhere else real easy.
Yeah. I've had trouble trying to wheel in a guest who's gone off on, you know, a tangent. And then, you know, luckily we have our show as being pre-recorded, and I'll tell them, hey, you kind of went off into a whole nother land. I'm going to have to cut that piece out. And they're like, oh, it's fine. I'm so sorry I went on. And so I always tell people beforehand, like I've had a couple people early on call me, say, hey, I want to be on the show. And my first question to them is like, okay, tell me a little bit about what you do and how you help people, because it's a business show. And if they can't tell me in less than a paragraph what you really do and how you help people, and you're still talking after 15 minutes, well, I'll tell you, I have to really go home and get clear on your message, because yeah, I don't want to hurt your brand, and I know you don't want to hurt your brand. So your suggestion to them to really practice ahead of time is a great, great suggestion. How do you help people train to either be a guest or to start their own show? I know you said before the interview that you actually are setting up training and workshops and all that. Tell us a little bit about that.
The first thing that I do is when they want to be a guest on a show like your Savvy Business Radio show, Christina, the first thing I do is I give them a little mindset. We go from backwards, forwards, like, what's the outcome? What's the reason you want to do this? Do you want to have people go to your website and sign up? Do you want them to find out about you? Do you want a little more attention? Maybe it's a nonprofit. So the first thing is the outcome. And once we get the outcome settled, then we back our way into it and we talk about basic skills of being a good guest, which is slightly different than people think, because it's talking shorter, not more than a minute, and giving the opportunity of the talk show host to look good in front of his listeners and to make the listeners feel like he really put on a good guest, or she really put on a good guest in your case.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Ooh, I like that, looking good in front of your audience, because we talked before the interview here how you mentioned you were being interviewed and you treated not so nicely. And I've actually had guests come on who actually put me down on my show and started to say disrespectful things. And of course, being a pre-recorded show, I'm able to remove that. But sometimes some people have a live show. How would you suggest they deal with either one side or the other? Either you have an abrasive guest who maybe might get disrespectful, or the other way around, where you happen to be a guest on someone's show and they're dealing with you in a little less than gentlemanly way, you might say.
Well, first, I look at it as being asked to be a guest on an interview on a radio show is an honor. So I look at it from a positive standpoint. And then, if they say something that's a little bit not so hot, I just listen. I kind of smile with my voice, and I say, that's a very interesting point. But the real reason I'm here is to talk about this, and then I transition right back into what I want to talk about. So I mention it, and then I go right away from it and go right back to what I want to talk about.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joel. I recently was on a radio show that's on Sirius Radio, and I know they like to get a little out there, not X-rated, but, you know, R-rated at times, and they warned me, and I was like, oh, okay, I think I can handle that, but they got a little bit out there, and I was a little uncomfortable, but I just let it roll with the punches and keep going with it, and then when they started to go off the deep end with record stuff, I was like, okay, let's go back to my business. Yeah, and just redirect it back to where you'd like the interview to be, because as you said in the beginning, you're there for results. You're there for an actual reason to provide value and content for the listeners and to be of service to the people listening in.
Oh, that's so true. And that's why practice is so important. And part of practicing is actually doing the interviews, because you have to do them to learn how to do them.
Absolutely.
There's another way to do it. And you asked me, that's what we do to train people, and we suggest that they just start doing interviews. Even we do mock interviews where they'll have their family members or friends ask them questions over the phone and record it and then listen to it. And it's amazing the results of what you hear, sometimes very good, sometimes not so hot.
Great idea, both for guests and hosts. I did that on Blog Talk Radio when I first got started 4.5 years ago. I asked a bunch of my friends to call in and be my guest so I could practice on them. I was so nervous. It's something I never dreamed of doing. I was very shy, and asking questions was not my idea of fun. It was really a method to, as a way to bring business into my business as a marketing tool. The practice ahead of time really helped me get comfortable with the idea of asking questions, and also led me to realize some things I could work on. Like in my case, it was shut up and let the guest talk, and also to stop cutting them off mid-sentence when I would like, oh, I want to say something when you're done, so let me just cut you off.
Yeah, it's very important that you be very respectful and you actually listen to what the other person is saying. Mm-hmm. Because often you're so anxious to get your point out that you're not even listening to the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard that in your training, you help folks get ready for an interview in little as 10 minutes. How do you do that in such a short amount of time?
Well, it's not as hard as you think, because 10 minutes is actually a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we start out, like I said, we focus on the outcome. Mm-hmm. Once we get a goal in mind, which takes a minute or two, then I just tell them to relax. And the third thing I tell them is to be confident, because most people are talking about their business, their livelihood, their profession, which they're really expert at. And if they realize that all they're doing is like talking to a friend or a family member or a customer about their business, then it all kinds of makes sense to them. And we don't go into a lot of details, and I just tell them, if you were talking to somebody, what are two or three of the most important things you want him to know about your business? And if you get that out, you've done a good job. It doesn't take 10 minutes. Many guests were uncomfortable at the beginning. And what we did is I got on the phone and we actually ran through a few questions like a mock interview. Like I would say, good morning, this is Joel Helfer from 560 AM The Answer. And the name of the show is called Remarkable Radio. And I said, hi, we have John Jones. Welcome to the show. And I'd ask him a few questions and he'd answer a few questions. And we'd do like a 3-4 minute interview. And I said, thank you very much. If you wanted to leave the listeners with some information about your show or about your business, what would you say? And he'd answer, and I'd thank you very much. And then I'd say, okay, take a deep breath. And the guy'd take a deep breath. And I go, how was that? And he goes, not bad. And I said, well, if you do that, then we can do the interview. So we do an interview before the interview.
Yeah.
It worked every time.
But I find like you're right. Most people can get the hang of it. And like I told these two folks, like the older gentleman is not going to do too many more radio shows. But the young lady, I told her, listen, just practice at it. Don't be nervous about it, because we're people just like you. And the people listening in are people. They're just curious to find out more about you. They're excited. And I think, Joel, this brings us back to people who talk on stage. We think when we get up to talk before people that they're there to ridicule us, find things wrong with our talk or our speaking to them. And that could be further from the truth, because they're sitting there just like you. They're people, and they're excited to hear what your message is and what you have to share with them.
Oh, yeah, and they're rooting for you, and they want you to do a good job. And probably one of the biggest obstacles, Christina, that I had to overcome was to get people comfortable speaking, because a lot of people think that they don't sound good, which is the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah.
Have you ever had anybody walk up to you and said, gee, you sound terrible?
No, never.
You know, and so that's probably the biggest obstacle. And once they get used to hearing their voice recorded, it makes them much more relaxed.
Absolutely. And working in both radio and in podcasting, what have you found is some of the myths that the public has either about podcasting or broadcasting in particular?
Well, one we just alluded to, they don't think they can do an interview because they don't sound good or they have nothing of value to say, which is the furthest from the truth. It's just a new skill, a mindset, and you have to look at it kind of like, you know, when you're getting married, you have a rehearsal for the wedding, or you practice so you look good on the dance floor, or you wear the right clothes so everybody says, oh, wow, how nice they look. A radio interview is pretty much the same thing. It's an opportunity to really shine. Take advantage of it. It has many benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly does. And it actually, what I found for me doing the podcast and being a guest is it's helped me really importantly get very clear on how my business helps people, how I as a business owner, what do we look like? How do we help people? And that when I first had people call me and they weren't clear, this is one awesome way to get clear by practicing, as you said, go on several shows, several podcasts, and getting clear about getting your message out to people. And the more you do it, the more comfortable it gets. And then you'll just meet people in the drugstore. Oh, what do you do? Oh, well, you know, I do a podcast and I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I have a coaching business or whatever it might be. It gets more and more easy. And on top of it, for me being shy, it helped me get out of my skin and be able to talk to people even on the street.
Well, the nice thing about radio interviews and podcasts, Christina, is most of them are done over the phone.
Yes.
So you don't have to get dressed up. You don't have to travel. You don't have to have a face-to-face confrontation if that's difficult for you. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is learn how to talk on the phone, which is a skill in of itself, but probably the easiest skill to get your message out. And that's what we help people do, is teach them how to talk on the phone, because now everybody would rather text than talk on the phone.
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. It's becoming a lost art here. And yeah, it's very important because I work in the industry outside of the podcast where I help people with their financial lives and their business. And it's very important to be able to deal with people not only on the phone, but sometimes face to face. But the phone is a very important tool. Since you told me before the interview that you have a whole bunch of wonderful programs and workshops for people to get them trained, share with them how they can find out more about that, more about you, more about your business.
Oh, what I'm doing is I'm setting up a new site. It's called radiogueststars.com because I like that term. I think anybody who's on the radio either is or should aspire to be a star. So the name of the website is called radiogueststars.com. You can also find me at joelhelfer.com. Mm-hmm. And on there is my phone number. And if you go there, you can call me up and I answer my own phones.
Ooh. I love that. Not too many businesses do that these days.
No, well, it's an old habit I had. And like with this new show and this new service I'm calling is radiogueststars.com, is I want people to get comfortable on the phone. Mm-hmm. And you just have to do it. It's just practice.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Preparation and a little bit of thought on an outcome. That's the message. And if you can grasp those few points, you can become not only a good but an excellent radio guest that gets invited back, which is an outcome.
Yes, absolutely. And do you also train people in person sometimes, or is it strictly via online and phone?
Oh, I'll do it in person if people like. But I find in today's society, people are just comfortable with telephone or on screen, and the days of in person, other than going to a big networking event, are rapidly coming to a close. It's a shame because that's my whole upbringing. I love face-to-face meetings. I love to see people and their reactions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's kind of why I do like sites like this or Skype.com.
I think that's an excellent tool. And the other one is Hangouts, which is a really good way for radio interviews also.
Yes, yes. Very, very prominent. I use it for business all the time as well. So this has been fabulous having you come out, Joel, and speak about this very important topic. I know we've gotten a lot of questions over the years about this. Share once again how people can get in contact with you.
Thank you very much, Christina. The way to get in contact with me is to go to my new site, radiogueststars.com, or my other site that's being put up as we speak, joelhelfer.com. And I thank you very much, Christina, for having me on the Savvy Business Radio Show. It's really been a pleasure and a delight. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you betcha. It's been fabulous. And we totally want to have you back. So keep us posted on everything. And thank you for coming to Savvy Business Radio.
I hope you have a great day. We'll be right back.